This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa Service at the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on a special recorded edition of Africa News Tonight.
We are struggling to dismantle the previous institution that were mainly used to enable Omar al-Bashir and his junta to rule the country the way they were doing. And it's a long process.
That's Salih Mahmoud, a lawyer and civil rights activist in Sudan. Details coming up also. This was a year of change in Mozambique, uncertainty in Ethiopia, and conditions worsening in Zimbabwe. We'll have these stories and more as our show takes a look at some of the big stories of the year on the continent. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start our New Year special look at key developments in Africa. First, we look at the political change, the ethnic unrest, the upcoming elections slated for May 2020 in Ethiopia. VOA Salem Salomon joins me now to talk about some of the changes and take a look at the national elections later this year. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Salem.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, Ethiopians used to think of themselves as Africans of a special kind who were not colonized, but the country right now, today, resembles a quintessential African system marked by ethnic mobilization for ethnic gains, which in turn has now turned to ethnic violence. What say you?
Well, you know, the ethnic violence in Ethiopia is very worrisome, and there are a lot of tensions. And the past year marked two major events that marked the highest ethnic tensions in the country. The first one was, and perhaps the most unsettling in the country, was when a foiled coup in late June led by a top general, Brigadier General Asamino Tsege, who government officials say masterminded the attacks and is from the Amara ethnic group. The uprising led to the killing of five government officials, including the regional president, Ambacho Mekonnen, and the army chief of staff in the capital, Sa'ara, Addis Ababa. Asamino himself was killed in a firefight with federal security forces, but he was a popular figure in the Amara region and recruited militias with views highlighting the ethnic tensions. Most of them were Amara nationalists. The second incident was in October. At least 86 people were killed in ethnically fueled clashes in Oromia region, Harari region, and the city of Dereda. The violence began when Oromo activist and media mogul Jawar Mohammed announced that security forces were plotting to assassinate him. His supporters responded by taking to the streets, and this tragic event underscored the year in ethnic tension in Ethiopia, where multiple ethnic groups are jockeying for power. So the ethnic tension is highlighted by the country's system of government known as ethnic federalism, and states or regions are formed along ethnic lines. So this is the repercussion of that. Ethnic groups have the right to petition the federal government for statehood, and several, most notably the Sidama of southern Ethiopia, demanded a referendum recently, and last month an overwhelming majority of Sidama voters voted in favor of statehood. So this is the first step toward making the Sidama region or Ethiopia's 10th state. So this is the ethnic repercussion of what we've seen in the past year.
So ironic, Salem, with all these ethnic violence in the background, Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts fostering peace with the country's neighbor Eritrea. So let's talk about what the ramifications are for this Nobel Prize.
You know, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee were very selective about the way they phrased it. For the effort of peace is what they said. A positive event for the continent, occurred in October when Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for a peace agreement he signed with Eritrea, a neighboring country with long history of enmity between the two countries. I'm originally from there, and we've seen 20 years of hostility between the two countries, Cold War situation or skirmishes along the border. Abiy has made numerous changes in the country, including releasing political prisoners, jailed journalists. So we've seen a lot of changes. His appointment of high-profile positions like Maaza Shanafi as the president of the Federal Supreme Court was particularly strong, signaling his support for civil liberties and women's rights. Maaza is a celebrated attorney who has crusaded for women's rights during her career. But people have questioned whether Abiy has sought to do too much too quickly. And critics have also pointed out that some tactics used by his predecessors, including shutting down the internet, have continued under his leadership until today. And so that's something to take a look at. His ultimate record remains to be seen. So we have to watch what happens. Although Abiy's leadership still carries a great sense of hope for many, many Ethiopians, there is an unsettled and anxious feeling in the country as it approaches elections in the coming year.
And Salem, last month, three of the four ethnic-based parties that make up Ethiopia's ruling coalition, the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, EPRDF, voted to merge into a single national party called Prosperity Party, PP. So with that as a background, talk to us about the upcoming elections in 2020, May 2020.
So the upcoming year promises to be tumultuous, given all the things that we talked about. And one, it's a tumultuous one from what we are seeing. Abiy Ahmed stands, he plans to stand for a re-election. The runner-up to this event, Abiy, dissolved Ethiopia's ruling coalition, the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, EPRDF, and created a new party, the Prosperity Party. And although three of the four ethnically based parties that had been part of the EPRDF, the coalition, voted in support of the move, it has drawn criticism because, including some from Abiy's own Minister of Defense, Lamma Magarsa, who said it will do nothing to quell the ethnic unrest in the country, including within the Oromo region. And so Abiy will face challenges, including perhaps maybe Jawar Mohammed will run. He said that he has plans to put his name on the ballot. So he is, like Abiy, he is from the Oromo ethnic group. So and he holds considerable following and sway among young people in Ethiopia. So it is going to be, I think, a tumultuous year to come.
VOA Salem Salomon, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
Mozambique's president, Filipe Nyusi, was re-elected in a landslide in October. However, the opposition Renamo Party disputed the results, claiming fraud and intimidation tactics were deployed by Nyusi's ruling party, Frelimo. That was just one of the major news stories in Mozambique and Angola in 2019. My colleague, Amancio Miguel from VOA's Portuguese service, is here in the studio to give us an overview of the year. Thank you for joining us, Amancio. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you very much.
Amancio, so let's start out with poor people still face the impact, particularly in central Mozambique, now getting worse with armed attacks and the cyclones as well. So let's talk about that first.
If you remember, the beginning of the year 2019, Mozambique was hit by two cyclones in northern and central Mozambique. First, it was in central Mozambique, so at least 600 people died, but thousands were affected. We went to the region after 6 months, and we saw similar situation. Here maybe I need to emphasize that in terms of economy in Beira, for example, economy is back, but poor people are still facing the impact, and these are people who were already poor, so government is not supporting them as they have been promised. There was an international conference as well to get funding for them, but nothing really is happening to these people. So these people are still struggling to make ends meet.
And then Cabo Delgado. Over 350 people killed since 2017.
Situation is still the same. There's this group, some people they say they're linked to Al-Shabaab, but there's no any clear indication, at least those who are working in the field, they cannot establish whether this is like an Islamic group or no. Although the Islamic group, they say that they're making these attacks, but it's not very clear. Experts say it's not very clear. So, and then the government is also not very clear in the kind of response they are working on. And we know of the last months of the year 2019, they deployed some Russians to help Mozambique to deal with this situation. But so far, the situation has not changed. So, as many people say, the government needs to be very clear and come with very strong strategies to stop the situation in the region.
You were in Mozambique for the elections. Frelimo won. Opposition say the whole thing was rigged. What is your overview of the whole thing there?
Well, I was in Mozambique to cover the election. I went to Cabo Delgado, I went to Central and in the southern region. During political rallies, there were so many people following the opposition, mainly Renamo, but as well following also Frelimo part. To surprise many, the big surprise was that Frelimo won with over 75% in the election, which is the first time that to happen. This gives a reason to opposition to say election were rigged, and also it's a process where there were some opposition member being not let to participate in the process, like to observe the election. Observing the election was a big issue. So opposition say, and many people believe that there was like some irregularities in the process.
And Amancio, let's go to Angola. New president vows to fight corruption. Can he do that over there, Angola?
He's trying. Mr. João Lourenço is trying to fight corruption in Angola. Some say there's no yet results, but we know, like, for example, the son of former president José Eduardo dos Santos was taken to court. This is a case which is still ongoing, but at least he's trying. Many organizations, they praise him for this effort.
How about Guinea-Bissau? Hopes for political stability over their presidential elections?
Presidential election, perhaps this year to 2020, Guinea-Bissau is going to see a better situation. The last 4 or 5 years has been very difficult. They had many prime ministers in a very short period of time. Perhaps this year's situation might change with the last presidential elections.
Amancio Miguel from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. 2 years ago, Zimbabwe's military ousted longtime president Robert Mugabe. The new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, promised change, especially regarding the country's battered economy. But in 2019, the economy got worse and Zimbabweans found themselves facing shortages of everything from fuel to cash to flour. To wrap up the year and look ahead at 2020, we have Gibbs Dube from the VOA's Zimbabwe service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Gibbs.
Thank you very much.
So, public discontent has grown in Zimbabwe with the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who has struggled to fulfill promises of economic prosperity and greater political freedom. What do you say?
It seems as if President Emmerson Mnangagwa is struggling to fulfill those promises. Actually, I think it stems from the high inflation rate that is pertaining in Zimbabwe right now. We're talking of inflation of 408.7%, you know, that was in November, and now it's higher than that. But remember that Zimbabwe is not actually publicizing its inflation rate, that is year to year. But the problem has been that, you know, the country has been trying to come out with some austerity measures, and those measures are not working at all. I think one of the most depressing issues is to do with the elections that were conducted in 2018. So the MDC formation led by Nelson Chamisa still claims that he was not legitimately elected. So that's the sticking point in Zimbabwe. So as a result, the mantra of the president of saying Zimbabwe is open for business is not working at all. So all the systems are down and people are really struggling. For example, fuel costs about $17.90 Zimbabwe dollars. That is about a dollar, a US dollar per liter. So, but Zimbabweans live below a dollar per day. So meaning that for you to get money for fuel, you have to struggle to get a dollar.
Exactly. So the economy is definitely crumbling. Yes. To the next topic, Gibbs, the health system has largely collapsed amid the worst economic crisis in the country's history. No end in sight to the Zimbabwe doctor strike over salaries and poor working conditions.
These doctors have been on strike since September 3rd, 2019, and they're demanding simple and basic things. They want their salaries to be pegged at the ongoing market rate of the US dollar to the Zimbabwe dollar. So the government says it doesn't have money to pay them. So they're down to their tools and the hospitals are almost closed. So people are really struggling to get to the, or they are failing literally to access healthcare. That is primary healthcare. And just imagine it, if people are giving birth, let's say women, they have to go the traditional way because there are no gynecologists. There's nothing in the hospitals. And if you are involved in a car accident, tough luck. You go to the hospital, any hospital in Zimbabwe, you're in trouble because there are no doctors. So there is no end in sight. And about 1,600 junior doctors are the ones that went on strike. And out of those, 450 have actually been fired. When they were fired, then the senior doctors and consultants joined them and said, can you bring them back? Otherwise, we're downing our tools. So the tools are down.
And Nelson Chamisa continues to dispute narrow loss to Mnangagwa in last year's election.
Yes.
So how does that play out in the political arena there?
Now, the crisis that Zimbabwe is facing right now is that when a president is declared illegitimate by a certain opposition party, which is the main opposition party anyway, then there's a crisis in the sense that the world is looking at what is happening in Zimbabwe and they are saying, look, there is no legitimate president in that country. So how do we, serve him? How do we invest our money in Zimbabwe when the president is not a legitimate president? But ZANU-PF is saying, no, this guy was actually confirmed by the Constitutional Court. So he's the legitimate president of Zimbabwe. That's a very big sticking point.
And lastly, Thabo Mbeki.
Yes, Thabo Mbeki, you still remember him? He went to Zimbabwe at one stage and said, there's no crisis in Zimbabwe. So he's back and he's saying there is a crisis in Zimbabwe. So he's trying to put all the parties together in a way that maybe they're trying to coin maybe a unity agreement. But what the opposition wants is a transitional government. They want a government without ZANU-PF, with the MDC and others, but having different players, So they want ZANU-PF out so that they can maybe have a government of the people by the people, which I think is totally impossible. Constitutionally, it doesn't work.
Gibbs Dube from VOA Zimbabwe Service, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much.
This year, there was a dramatic change in Sudan, starting with a massive street protest that eventually led to the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. Salih Mahmoud is a lawyer from central Darfur. The human rights defender also is vice president of the Darfur Bar Association. He was imprisoned 5 times for representing other victims of the repressive Bashir government. I spoke with Mahmoud about the historical changes Sudan has experienced.
My general assessment is that there is change that is obviously mainly, we call it change from the previous regime, by the absence of Omar al-Bashir, who has been ousted out of power. And I am carefully calling this transition not a civilian-led transitional period, because, in fact, it is the military TMC members who are leading this or ruling the country for almost 2 years from now, out of 3 years of the transitional period. And then it's too early also to say that there is transition, because still we are struggling to dismantle the previous institution that were mainly used to enable Omar al-Bashir and his junta to rule the country the way they were doing. And it's a long process, and there are steps, but not sufficiently satisfactory to the normal people of Sudan, especially when there are laws that they are not consistent with the Bill of Rights and other international standards. This is number one. But the second important thing is that also the current regime is still using the same laws to strengthen its grip on resisting the fight of impunity. Cash of impunity was the obvious phenomena during the 30 years of Omar al-Bashir regime. It's been a cash. Unless these laws are abolished, impunity would still be like an obstacle for millions of people who have been waiting justice and accountability.
You were there when all this change was taking place. What did you feel the mood of the people? What you're saying right now is the military actually is running the government for the next 2 years. So should we discount the civil government?
The feelings of the people is a mixture of disappointment, frustration, but there is little hope that still the momentum is there. Momentum of revolution and resistance is there. People are determined to go through specific acts to pressure the government, address the legitimate demands of the people, especially issues of justice and accountability, not only accountability for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity that occurred in Darfur and other areas like Nuba Mountain, Blue Nile, and even center of Sudan and the north, in the east. People are determined to see justice be done, because without justice, there will never be peace. There will never be. And people are saying we cannot accept compromise of peace against justice, because horrors and atrocities that occurred are horrible. And if there is no accountability, then potential perpetrators will be more emboldened to continue committing crimes, as is happening even today. So issue of justice and accountability is in the center of the demand. Now, the feeling is that the constitutional document that has been signed is far from addressing these issues, because we have now a situation where the members of the TMC, who included themselves in the Sovereign Council, it is deliberately designed to allow them escape accountability and to enjoy impunity for the coming three years, and this will never be acceptable.
That was Sudanese lawyer and human rights defender Salih Mahmoud sharing his thoughts about the changes in Sudan. And here is a quick summary of some of the other big news in Africa in 2019. Robert Mugabe, who ruled Zimbabwe for 37 years, died in September at the age of 95. The Zimbabwe military forced him from office in 2017. In December, former Algerian Prime Minister Abdelmadjid Tebboune was elected president, and thousands took to the streets in protest. Demonstrators forced out former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, and they say they want all those tied to his decades of rule out of the government. And violence in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo threatens efforts to halt an Ebola outbreak that has killed more than 2,000 people since August 2018. And Boeing company says it will suspend production of its 737 MAX jets nearly 10 months after one of the jets crashed in Ethiopia, killing all 157 people on board. The U.S. Aircraft Regulatory Agency says it won't approve the jets to fly until well into the year. And that wraps up this special recorded edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, we wish you a happy 2020 and thanks for choosing The Voice of America.